Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the MadTech Podcast. We are coming to you from New York City. Yay! Woo! Thank you, audience. That's very kind of you. As is the tradition with our live podcast, live recordings of our podcast, we tend to focus on one particular topic. This week it is ITP and the future of publishers in a privacy first world. So I will let my wonderful guests introduce themselves.
Hey, I'm Joe Root. I'm one of the co-founders and CEO of Permutive. We're a publisher-first data management platform.
I'm Nathan Woodman. I am an ad tech native. Until recently, I was the chief data officer at Havas Media here in the US. So in this conversation, I'll represent the buy side.
Brilliant.
Hello, I am Jason Schmidt, Vice President of Data Strategy and Partnerships for Condé Nast. So I guess I'm repping the publisher world.
You are indeed. That's exactly why you're here. Thank you very much. Right. Thank you, gentlemen. I want to say as well, thank you very much to, we're coming from the offices of Hudson MX today. So I have to say a big thank you to them for putting us up. It's very, very cool offices. As is the format of our podcast, we will look at a couple of big news stories that are relevant to this topic. Both of them come from Alex Stranger this week. And the first one is actually Alex Stranger's editor, Sarah Lewis, she's asking questions that the journalists want the answers to, which is what happens when the cookie crumbles away? And she makes an interesting point. She says, as a journalist, I don't know kind of what's right and what's wrong, what's smoke and mirrors and what's actually real. And, you know, it's one thing saying that from a journalist perspective, but actually that if journalists are saying it, that means buyers and sellers are saying it too. So, you know, Nate and Jason, do you feel the same? Do you like, where do we look when we've got all these solutions coming to us saying they claim to do this, they claim to do that? Actually, is it very, very challenging to understand what it is you're looking and the right questions to ask? Let's start with you, Jason, from the publisher side.
I think it's very challenging. We talked a little bit before this started. I think you get pitched by vendors all the time. There's new vendors coming out of the woodwork. They pitch amazing technology. Some of it a little bit on the fringes of whether we would even consider that in this space. I think it's helpful to have folks on staff that have an experience in that space, whether that's ad tech veterans or agency technology veterans, to really vet through the solutions that are being pitched to you. But also, I think it's if you're a major publisher or a large publisher, or you're forward thinking, you're investing in people and technology internally to build for yourself, build the solutions that you need to operate your business versus necessarily relying on folks where you can kind of fill in that gap on your own.
Yeah, makes sense. And Nate, what about from the agency side? Were you constantly getting attacked by people talking about identity and we've got the solution, we've got the answer, and then you don't really know what it is you're looking for?
Yes, 100%. You're constantly being approached by people that have the answer, right? Mm-hmm. Almost in every case, you're usually talking to somebody, but that doesn't know how it actually works.
Right.
And so
because they haven't built it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's definitely a buyer beware, kind of like, a logic where you have to ask the how. You have to ask, like, what is the sequence of events? When do you get the data? How are you actually doing XYZ? And you have to kind of get into the weeds in order to validate it. And usually that only happens with conversations with the product team and the engineering teams, and not necessarily the sales teams. So you have to bring some know-how to the table in order to vet the solutions properly. Everyone thinks that they have the answer, and because it's really the salesperson's job to take that position.
Right, absolutely.
I would also say exploit your network too. Like, we're all in this room because we're all from this background. Like, call up your bench and say, hey, have you guys heard of this technology, this provider? What's your experience with them? I think 9 times out of 10, my circle of friends will veto something or give it the heads up and the go ahead. And so I think I rely a lot on expertise of folks that are in my.
Yeah, that's a great point. So much of this must be word of mouth. It has to be, right? Yeah. And so, Joe, from your perspective, kind of, are you just a kind of smoke and mirrors solution? And you know, this will be interesting, guys.
Yeah. No, I hope. I think what is going on is that there is an ad tech industry which was built for an old world. That world is collapsing in on itself because of privacy, and those vendors are being told, hey, we need you to fix the problems of this breaking ecosystem. And the reality is ad tech can't rebuild itself to work in the same way whilst respecting the constraints of what the browsers are trying to do and what the regulators are trying to do. So I do think it is on publishers, I think it is on buyers, to actually really understand what the browsers and the regulators are trying to do. The browsers are really explicit in their policies on what they're trying to do. They're trying to kill identity or cross-domain identity. So any vendor who says, hey, I can fix cross-domain identity, you know that they're lying to you. So I think it's really important that people spend time actually in the details of the technical documentation, because these policies are really transparent, but also acknowledge that ad tech isn't going to work in the way it used to before. Matt earlier referenced that publishers should seek to rebuild identity. I think there are a lot of frameworks which try to rebuild identity. The reality is identity doesn't work in the way it used to because browsers don't want it to. That's the new world.
Yeah, very good point. For the benefit of listeners at home, we had Matt Prohaska speaking earlier on a panel, and that's what Joe is referencing there. But I mean, so Joe, you make a very good point, but I guess coming back to Nate and Jason, kind of, you know, do you know what questions you should be asking? Do you even understand, you know, how to tackle what the future of the cookie looks like, the future of identity, how to tackle ITP, and, you know, if Safari is launching ITP and kind of banning link decoration, how now do I target my consumers instead? Do you know, or from a publisher perspective, then what do I do now? Is Safari just defunct to me? I can't actually get money, get any revenue from this browser anymore. Kind of, where do we take these questions?
I think the first thing, which Joe said, thanks. I think the first realization is that we are going to go through a gray, opaque period, right? And by the time we get on the other side of it, we are still going to have the things that we are used to. We're going to figure out attribution, right? We're going to figure out behavioral profiling. We're going to figure those things out, but it's not going to work in the same way that it has, right? So I think you just have to kind of approach, you know, this realization that we're entering a period of uncertainty. Right. But you're also entering it with some level of confidence is like, as you start, you know, asking the how, asking the why, asking the what, the path in order to kind of get somewhere somewhat close to all the tools that we have today will appear, you know, throughout this transition period. So I think to answer your question directly, it's not 100% clear. Right, you know, what it's going to happen, what it's going to look like. But just, you know, we've all been in this industry. We're tinkerers, right? We like the details, right? And so it's like, and collectively, we're going to figure this out.
Right. Yeah. Do you agree, Jason?
I agree. I think for us too, it's aggressively pursuing direct relationships, to be frank with you.
Yeah.
It's with our biggest advertisers, we have those conversations. We sit in those rooms. We come up with direct solutions that cuts out sort of the intermediaries and goes direct back and forth. And whether that's figuring out a way to sync IDs directly without using an intermediary or using a trusted intermediary with a sort of a Switzerland of syncing, like we will aggressively pursue those before anything else.
Mm. And another thing that Sarah mentioned in her article is that the great example of Criteo. Criteo, you know, in their earnings call, they announced magnanimously, we found a workaround for ITP. We can fix this. We can solve this. Apple then went, okay, then we'll shut that down immediately. And Criteo said, we are never ever saying anything like that publicly again. So the challenge you have is actually you guys need solutions to be able to help you navigate this space. And then the tech layer want to be able to help you, but can't really do it very publicly anymore. Because if they do, the browsers instantly go, we know what your game is. We're going to shut you down. Joe, how do you navigate that?
Really good question. I think the way you navigate it is by working for the world which the browsers are describing. The browsers are saying, hey, we don't believe in a world where users should be tracked across domains. Our policies are really explicit about that. That is the same for Apple as it is for Mozilla. You look at Chrome's privacy sandbox, it is exactly the same. So for ad tech or technology in general, actually the solution is say, hey, what is the world the browsers are trying to push us towards? And how do we build an alternate reality which reflects that world? So if you look at Criteo, the reason why Criteo has done so well is it knows you are the same person as you move across the web. That no longer works anymore. So how do we now move to a world where instead of buying off identity, you buy off something else instead, like a description of the user? So I think there are new ways. It is just that the ad tech companies which exist today are heavily incentivized to keep the old ways working. But right. You dig into Chrome's privacy sandbox, they have a really clear outline of how to rebuild retargeting and attribution and all these things in a way which respect the user's privacy, but don't track across domains.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I think you have to come up with your own filter and your own criteria, right? And I think the path to that, you know, as Joe is alluding to, is that you have to think through what does the future look like? And so you have to think through, how do I future-proof this? How does this work not just, you know, for the next 3 months because someone found a hack around, you know, a browser release, but how does this work in 5 years given the context of, you know, cookies don't exist, right? And, you know, does it work if cookies don't exist? Does this methodology work if there's no such thing as raw log file data anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you start, you know, it's like, is the solution built to operate in that world or not?
Yeah, interesting.
I would say don't work against the consumer. Like for us, like the consumer is our most important piece of our value chain. And if we're doing things that are subverting their trust for us, that's the most catastrophic thing. Like, we'll figure out the monetization side of it, but don't taint that trust. We don't want to be in some publication as the publisher that did something wrong, because that has longer term impacts for us than trying to work within the constraints of the browser and trust.
Definitely. The challenge here is, you mentioned consumer, and in these conversations, the word consumer rarely gets brought up, because actually we're trying to solve ad tech for ourselves and for the sake of ad tech, not solve it for the sake of the consumer. And the reason, you know, people might think differently, but the reason that Google and Apple are doing this and trying, because they're trying to protect their consumers and make sure their consumers, you know, are operating in a safe environment that they trust. And then you guys obviously have to work to the same mentality. Like, well, actually, this is for our consumers. This isn't for us. Obviously, we're trying to make money at this. We are a commercial business, but it's about the consumer. And as long as the consumer trusts us, that's where our opportunity lies. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think for sure, fair. The analogy that I used a long time ago when this industry, you know, when we were kind of starting to think about these ad exchanges and the buyer and the seller transaction and the auctions, was that, you know, the ecosystem's a three-legged stool. Right, you have the buyer, you have the seller, and you have the consumer. If one of them feels like they're not receiving fair value, they're going to withdraw. Mm. Right, and I think what we're seeing right now is that maybe the consumer might be a bit naive, but at least the regulatory environment and, you know, Apple is seeing a commercial opportunity to take that position. The leg that supports the consumer is withdrawing. Right. And, you know, that's what we're seeing right now. And so, you know, we have to figure out a way to, in order for the environment and the ecosystem to work for the consumer, you know, you still have the buyer and the publisher still need to receive fair value as well. So we just need to figure out a way to bring that back together. And it probably has to do with something, some form of, you know, identity, you know, kind of like a centralized identity that's opted in, and maybe even something like the stuff that like DigiTrust doing with the user consent management. I think that helps a lot. But then there's also like activity like OpenID, which, you know, has been around for 15 years, right? But it hasn't really gotten much attention, right? And so there's a kind of a new part of the conversation, which is going to involve user receiving fair value, and we'll have an opportunity to recorrect.
But that you mentioned pockets. There are pockets of swathes of activity happening in certain regions, in certain markets, using certain technologies to try and solve this. Actually, is that not just complicating things more? Do we not need one solution that's going to be the be all and end all? Or do we need these different solutions to be able to trial and work out, actually, this is the one that's going to work and take us to the future? Obviously, Joe, your perspective is interesting on this because you're trying to build that solution alongside many others are trying to do similar things in very different ways.
Yeah, I think... everyone has a different operating principle for how they approach it. I think the operating principle we operate under is that actually ad tech as an ecosystem can't be trusted. Ad tech as an ecosystem, when it's given a user's identity, will go and pillage data and harvest it. It doesn't really listen to the TCF. It doesn't really pay attention to the regulation. It will push everything to an extreme. I think the standpoint which we reach, which is very similar to Firefox's, to Safari's, to Google's, is actually that you shouldn't trust third parties with a user's identity anymore. And actually, if you can remove that from the ecosystem, then actually you can rebuild ad tech in this really fair way. So I think from our perspective, there is a lot of rebuilding to be done in this. We have a stance, which is actually that we think the user's privacy is the most important thing in this world. And the way to protect that is actually to remove identity from the ecosystem and give it back to publishers, but publishers only.
But I mean, so do you guys think that's fair, what Joe's saying, that, you know, basically we shitted up ad tech, but we've now got to fix it, but not for ourselves, fix it for everybody else that's had to use it, had no choice but to use it over the however many decades it's been running?
It's one of those things where it's hard because, like, our main goal is to remove all the friction between the buyer and our site, right? And so while we rely on these tools to monetize, and it's like Google and Facebook, like, we rely on them, but we also are competitors in a lot of ways. And so how do we support the technology and the platforms that get the buyer to the site, but also respect the consumer is the challenge we always struggle with. And I think for us, if you are not a major publisher, you're not, I think Matt Paraska brought this up earlier, if you're not thinking about yourself as a platform yourself and figuring out how do I build the tools to self-support and not rely on ad tech, or if you do rely on ad tech, rely on vendors you absolutely trust, can has your best interest in mind. I think for us, it's how do we remove the friction? How do we become a platform ourselves? How do we staff that? So data science, marketing science, like these are things that publishers as a platform themselves should be staffing up and should be providing those services back to the advertiser to build, again, that direct relationship with them where they can. I guess that's not going to work for everybody, but I'm speaking sort of from a Comscore top 10 publisher. It's a different perspective, obviously, for like the mid long tail who have to, I think, rely more so on these tools than maybe folks like us. So it's sort of unfair in that context, and I think for those guys, they have to figure that piece out and still make themselves available to the buy side and figure out how to do that in a way they can monetize.
And that's a fair point, because they're the ones that don't have the scale or the heft to be able to do that. They can't create direct relationships with agencies and with advertisers, because the advertising agencies will work with you big guys, the Condé Nast of the world, but they're not going to work with all the small to medium-sized publishers, because how can you manage that as an agency, as a planner buyer? You're having to have a million direct relationships. That's why tech exists in the first place, to be able to manage that, right?
Oh, not really. I mean, I want to go through a kind of something that, at my old company Havas that we did over the past year, is that, we went from a place, kind of in the forefront of this supply path optimization thing, even though, the company probably uses about, six or so major DSPs, it was using 68 SSPs, right? And we went through a process, where we rolled that back to 7, right?
Wow.
So when you start talking about 7 conversations instead of 68 conversations, you can have that. Right. The agencies are also in the business of having conversations with direct publishers. Mm-hmm. So I think the conversation between, the conversation between the agent and or the buyer and the publisher, I think that's back. Right. And I think that's, that has like, how can we work together? How can we work, closer together? But that comes through this idea of consolidation.
Yeah.
Right. In that transaction of scaling back. I mean, a lot of companies haven't done it, mostly because they're afraid of a drop in scale. We saw none of it. The only thing we saw was about a 20% drop in fraud.
Interesting.
But delivery stayed the same. Conversion stayed the same. But it's like, if you can do that, then you can have those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys, there are agencies like Havas is a great example of this, that are really trying to own that relationship and own that direct conversation. And we actually talked about it in a podcast a few weeks ago. And actually, I think it was your name that came up, Nate, was Havas and other agencies going straight to the exchanges saying, we want that log level data directly from you. Yeah. We want that transparency. And obviously, that does tie into this, because as long as those direct relationships are happening and we're kind of eking out the irrelevant tech in the middle and only keeping what is relevant to us and what we need to be able to navigate this new evolving ecosystem that we live in, that is where agencies are becoming smarter, advertisers are becoming smarter, publishers might be a bit kind of galled by it and go, no, we're not giving you that, this is personal to us, but actually those direct relationships can only really net out to the right solution and the right way forward.
Edgar.
Yeah, everyone's nodding at me, so everyone agrees. Fine. That leads into our second story of the week, again, as I said, from Ad Exchanger, and we've mentioned his name a few times already. This is actually written by our own Matt Brahaska, basically giving his top tips as to how publishers can fight the identity crisis, and gives his three kind of big ways they can do that. So interested to hear from you, Jason, if you're doing it already or if you're falling on your ass actually instead. So number one is create an easy way to have everyone log in to access your content and services, not just paid for subscribers. We talk about single sign-ons a lot, and Google and Facebook and everybody else has them, and they've got a great way of making it as easy for you as possible to be able to get access to your data. Then you go and log into a publisher site and they've got no idea who you are, despite the fact that you're a subscriber, and it can be very, very challenging.
Yeah.
And you have to do the same process for every single publisher site you go and visit.
Yeah.
Number two is organize your DMP or get a real customer data platform to break down organizational silos and leverage paid earned known media. And number three is getting involved with the IAB Tech Lab. We heard from Deus Buckheim earlier. There are the solutions there, that the global standards that they're trying to roll out. There's opportunities there for publishers to get involved with and create deterministic ID graph standards. So standards are things that keep coming up. Do you agree with those, all three of you, as how publishers can navigate this? Are they the best ways? Or do you think that Matt is just doesn't know what he's talking about?
Is he still here?
Yeah, he's still here. He's waving at the back. There we go. Does Matt know what he's talking about? Joe, let's start with you.
Oh, epic. Yeah, I would actually agree across all three, simply because it'd be awkward if I didn't.
It would, actually, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point.
No, I think it's like spot on, is the browsers have given publishers the opportunity to own identity, I think having login definitely makes sense for publishers. It gives something which is more persistent, allows them to go and connect with their buyers. I think it would be an absolute shocker if publishers got login, they got their email addresses, and they went and handed it over to ad tech companies and just gave all of their power back to the ecosystem all over again. So I would maybe caution publishers that in doing so, you don't just hand that login over to ad tech company A or B. Instead, you keep that to yourselves. Facebook certainly don't give away their deterministic identities. Obviously, I'm hugely biased on whether publishers should get a DMP or customer data platform.
Surprising, that one. Yeah. Yes.
So I'll step away from that one. And then on the third one, yeah, I really agree. I think in working more closely with the IAB, actually there's a chance to shape privacy-safe protocols which work for publishers and scale. I think all the changes mean that publishers are going to end up with a more direct relationship with buyers. I think what the IAB can do is simplify that and provide protocols which make it more scalable.
Interesting.
So I'd agree with all three.
And Jason, over to you. I'm just pouring myself a little glass of water here, so apologies while I just get distracted by that. I've got a very dry mouth.
Yeah, no.
I start talking while I just carry on doing this.
I agree across the board. I think we obviously want to provide friction-free experience. We have 19 publications that all sit on the same back-end platform that we built ourselves and same ID platform we built ourselves. But I understand the viewpoint of we don't want to get in the consumer's way. But at the same time, it's give them a reason to give you the information. Provide an experience to them that they want to give you a login. They don't mind managing that thing. Don't syndicate that off to Facebook login or some other provider. I think it was one of Matt's points in that article too. You take ownership of that thing. And then I think the dividends pay off in the long haul. But also that means you have to build product that people want to sign up for, right? And so if you don't build the products, there's no reason to do that thing. I think it can be great content, but it needs to be an overall value proposition that's beyond that. I think on the DMP front, I 100% agree. I think if you are leaving it up to some third-party contextualization engine to contextualize your site on behalf of ad tech, I think you're missing a huge opportunity, especially if you're creating great content. Own that, right? Invest in creating your own segments. Invest in data partnerships direct with high-quality vendors. Don't bring in third-party data and try to crosswalk with yours. Go to the source of that data and have that conversation with them directly. And obviously, I'm speaking from somebody who can build a team around that thing, but reach out to those folks. Find the right data that maybe is not endemic to you as the publisher, but provides value and sort of enhances and decorates your own data. And then invest in making those data products a reality. Because, I think for us, it's contextual segments are great. Behavioral segments are great. Commingled segments with quality data is even better. So invest in that thing. And I think on the third piece, it's interesting. The identity piece is interesting because we were talking about this earlier. Every agency is obviously trying to build their own data platform, right? You have Elan, you have M Platform, you have AMP. You have all these guys are trying to build their value proposition to their marketers. And of course, they want us to integrate with them as well to become sort of an equal player within their buying tools. And then they have their form of identity, and then they have other partners they're using for identity. So it can get very confusing on our side is who do you go with? Who do you choose to work with? Is it sort of the IAB who's driving this thing and is very standards-based? Is it the thing that has the most penetration in market? Is it the agencies you start there because you know that the buyers are sitting there waiting to spend money? So I think we try to figure out what ID solution is going to make it in the end. And which one's going to be the one everyone kind of rallies around? And will there be one? Can there ever be one? I agree on it, but I it's hard to kind of for us to vet that.
It's hard to quantify right now, right? Yeah.
Let's just review the questions for the audience and myself.
I talked too long.
you did ramble, Jason.
There was a login.
I'm joking.
Right?
There was a login.
There yep. was
DMP, DMP or CDP. Yeah. Right?
And then there's IAB Tech Lab.
Tech Lab.
Okay. All right. So first one. So just about login. And again, coming from the buy side perspective, but kind of trying to understand the reciprocal here. The notion of grabbing an identity and getting a login and controlling it seems paramount, right? It seems like it's especially in a world of let's call it ID or UUID instability, right? And even maybe future device ID instability. And that process does create potentially a speed bump, which we've heard a couple times today. But it's also, you also have to kind of consider this, think about it in the longer term. It's like, look at the user, right? It does potentially create a bit of a speed bump. And I can just see that you know, a user like logs in here. Eventually they have to log in, like 50% of the time they go to a singular domain, they have to log in, right? They go to a whole bunch of domains, they have to give them another login and an email. I think at some point the consumer, you know, the user just says, please give me back the internet like I wanted it, like it used to be for me, right? And I think that there's an opportunity for single sign-on, but I think it's a single sign-in that is not commercialized or weaponized.
Right.
Right. I think it has to be something that's more just, that's more, delivers the value to the consumers that they can handle their consent management,
so
which sounds more like a standard.
Yes, not commercializing or weaponizing. It means who then would have that control? Yeah,
this is
who
where,
would own
this, is where I think IB, I think this answers the third question, right? So this is where IB Tech Lab comes in. This is where OpenID comes in. This is where these kind of open consortiums come in that can help manage identity so it's not commercialized or weaponized. And it respects the user's consent, and hopefully there's a way to respect the publisher's consent as well. Within that dynamic. So I think the login event, you know, kind of is like, yes, get the login event, but I just feel the long run on that is, you know, the regulation is kind of in, and Apple are speaking for the consumer right now, but once the consumer's voice is heard, still think, I mean, I'm just going to take a wild number here, but maybe 60% of the population still opts in to have the internet like it used to be. Like how it used to operate. And I think that there's an opportunity for that.
You think we can get, we could in some way get back to the way it used to be?
I think that's the long run. There's going to be, this is my point about that we're in a period of uncertainty. That's going to be a 3 to 5 year period of uncertainty. We don't know how that's going to shake out. But at the tail end of that, I think that's, you know, we end up with the user consent being respected through some type of standard, because there's going to be a lot of people that say, I just give me the internet like it used to be for me, please.
Joe, you're nodding furiously along with what Nate's saying.
Well, I think the industry has this weird obsession with identity and can't seem to look beyond it.
You're absolutely right, actually. It's all we talk about.
Completely blinded by like this love and desire for identity. And actually, I think the things which people want as a result of identity, let's talk about that. People want measurement. They want attribution. They want targeting.
Yeah.
Identity doesn't have to be a part of that. So I'm referencing it a lot, but look at Chrome's privacy sandbox. In there, what they suggest is rather than identity, you move everything into the user's web browser. And the web browser then manages things like attribution, it manages measurement, it manages targeting. I think that's a really clean model for the world. It's like, actually, how do you rebuild those three things without having to have a user's identity? And the reason why I don't think you should have a user's identity is because you can't trust other people with this data. As soon as it gets out there, there is all this stuff downstream which happens, and browsers believe that, and regulators believe that. That is why, like under the GDPR, you can be prosecuted if PII data is attached to it, e.g. a cookie, e.g. identity, but you aren't prosecuted if there's no data, if there's no PII or identity attached to it. So actually, I think we need to look past identity as an industry and say, hey, how do we rebuild without it?
Yeah, I think it comes back to, you know, something that we've heard a couple times. The only thing we know for certain is it's not going to be the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it still very much which path do we follow, or do we actually have, do we think there is a steer now and we're kind of heading in the right direction, but it'll take us a long time to get there? Or are we still like, well, we could go left or we could go back on ourselves. We could take the yellow brick road that way. Like, do we actually know the direction we should be going in?
We have no choice.
Right.
Like, it's completely out of our control, right? The browsers and the regulators are deciding. No one in this room has any control over the future of ad tech. It is quite literally like Google and Apple and Mozilla.
That's a sad state of affairs, though, isn't it?
No. Personally, I think they seem better custodians than the old ones. But I think regardless, the push is like, hey, how do we rebuild this in a safer way?
Right, yeah.
I think part of it, too, I spent some time at Mozilla. And what I found there was a lot of times people, it's hard to explain all these concepts to a consumer in a way that, like, they just, the internet sort of happens. Like Nate was saying, you just kind of, you experience the web. The understanding of the value proposition of content to advertising, just the average consumer just doesn't quite really know why the web is free in a lot of ways. And I think that's changing a lot with the things like the Facebook issues and things like that are kind of bringing to the forefront this thing is happening, that people should care about it or even are sort of, you know, woken up to it. But it's hard, I think, to make people really understand how the web operates.
Yeah, I agree. We talk a lot about value exchange, and the general consensus is that that value exchange is being better understood. But actually, you ask your average person on the street kind of why you see ads or why you do what you do, they will still have no idea. And they would still think of them as just really annoying.
And those consent boxes are terrifying.
Oh,
too,
they
are right?
Ridiculous.
Like,
I mean,
no, you're going to hit no.
I am a European. It is stupid, absolutely ridiculous. But also, most people don't know what they're clicking, what they're looking at. And the joke is that obviously under the GDPR, we aren't talking about you not receiving ads. So when you're saying I'd say no to it, it just means you won't see relevant ads. You'll still see ads. And I'm now getting retargeted by tractors. And I don't want a tractor. I live in London and I've got no use for a tractor, but that is genuinely what I'm seeing. Now, when I say no, I don't want to see relevant ads, that is what I get instead. So I think someone's doing it on purpose just to make me go, okay, I accept, I consent. But it's a really bizarre situation that we're currently in, I personally think. So I'm also interested, Jason, from your perspective, you talked about data and you talked about the 19 titles that you have. Was it 19 you said? Condé Nast?
Yeah.
Thereabouts.
Yeah.
Probably growing and all the time. How do you manage login across all of those? If I were to go to one title, I would then be able to access all of them? Or is it, you talk about silos a lot, and obviously you're trying to do this across all different publications, but actually they're all still very separate entities. How do you manage that? And how do you manage identity within that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think part of that, we're still getting there, right? So we have some of our sites that are just prone to subscription, right? You have the New Yorker, you have Wired, we have paywalls on some sites. Some sites do not have that. On the back end, you are the same person on GQ and Vogue and Wired and Ars Technica. Across our whole network, you're the same ID internally. The login piece of that, there is no sort of unified wall across all of those properties. It's something that we're actively thinking about, but also we're thinking about what's the why? Like, what is the value prop behind that thing that we would federate that login? I think we will get to some version of that at some point. It's just the product has to catch up with the experience to do that thing. But having that unified ID behind the scenes allows us, obviously, to connect all of those consumers on the back end. And it's the same platform for us that powers recommendations and personalization across all of our sites. That was sort of the reason we built all of those things to begin with, is like, we'll start with the experience. The byproduct of that was that we built something really interesting that we can leverage to help marketers as well. And then separate from display and media altogether, it's like, what other valuable things can we provide marketers with this data set? And it's a lot of times it's like, hey, big retailer, push data into our ecosystem, push onboard data in, give me just general insights. So say something that's like a ride sharing company, for example, they know a bunch about ride sharing. They don't really know much else. They can kind of discern travel by your sort of behaviors. But what was something that we could provide, since we write across a bunch of different types of content, push data in and provide sort of an insights practice on top of that, not even tied to media, but like, what other interesting things could we do with that data since we had that sort of unified ID? I think there's other value propositions that we'll pursue with that thing.
Interesting. And I want to understand as well, you talk about kind of helping marketers, and we're talking about the future of the third-party cookie and the relevance that has or doesn't have in the future, and the value of first-party logged-in data that publishers have in droves. Marketers do to a certain extent, depending on what kind of marketer they are. But I also want to know kind of where the crossover is. And, you know, for example, we're seeing brands start to buy publishers. We're seeing publishers not necessarily buy big brands, but we're seeing them go into that kind of area as well, as a way of getting another source of data, another source of first party logged in data. Do you think we're going to start to see more of a crossover? So brands becoming publishers, publishers becoming brands, in an effort to be able to own that identity layer more than they currently do. What's your perspective, Nate, on this?
100%. I think this is, Kieran, I think, wrote about this recently when I think Nike bought, some app, but this, happened a long time ago with Under Armour.
Under Armour, absolutely.
Right? I don't know if they're really utilizing it, but
I heard it's not profitable. So
It would kind of no judgment there, but just the idea of really a brand, the only thing they really need to do is to have a panel. They just need to sample. Right. And they need to make sure that a sample is unbiased, and they can join the data assets together. Then they can start creating a ton of different probabilistic models. Right. And so they don't need to own everything. You just need to own enough.
Yeah.
Right. And it has to be. And then you have to go through the exercise of making sure that it's not biased. Mm. So I think we are going to see more of that. And I think digital will start having to act and behave more like a probabilistic panel and like more of a research environment, which is, you know, what we've always been accustomed to in television,
yeah.
You know, as an example. So I think the, you know, television is going to become more like digital because we hear about that OTT stuff, but digital also has to become a lot more like television.
Interesting. Very interesting perspective of that. Joe, from your perspective, like talking about brands becoming publishers, publishers becoming brands, from the sort of DMP standpoint, like how would that change the way that many of your clients operate if they are able to kind of act as both and have the benefits of both and really understand from as an advertiser, understand everything about their customers, be able to then deliver that as a publisher as well?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. A lot of publishers we work with are starting to realize their power in this new world. So all of a sudden, as third-party cookies disappear, actually publishers, all of a sudden, the ones left holding the data, right? And the reality is third-party cookies will likely die over the next 6 to 12 months. So publishers are starting to recognize the power which they have. You look at some of our clients, people like BuzzFeed, they derive an enormous amount of value from the insights which they can derive from what users are reading, what they're engaging with, the type of content, to then go on and build an e-commerce strategy. And I think to Jason's point earlier, if publishers can better work with marketers to get that data into their ecosystem, and then also to Nate's point on modeling, then actually you've got a world where publishers can offer marketers these really rich data-led solutions, and publishers are learning about that because they're also working as marketers themselves in many cases.
Mm. Jason, what's your perspective on this? Like, you know, what is, could Condé Nast be moving into new areas? You look at next generation publishers, and BuzzFeed is an example of that. There's obviously still very content driven. They're now obviously ad funded as well, but they're also going into the e-commerce side of things with everything they're doing kind of on their Tasty platform. Yeah. Are we starting to see more of that? How are Condé Nast going to navigate that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when we look at our products, we have an in-house agency, we have an in-house video production, we have experiential, we have a live event company. Like we're have our sort of hands in a bunch of different cookie jars.
You're all over the place.
I think our big thing now is we're kind of combining the international operations of Condé in our 32 territories with the U.S. operations. So we're trying to figure out what does that look like.
That's a bigger thing right now than trying to work out if you should go into e-commerce. I get that. I can see why that would be the case.
I think once we kind of crack that nut and kind of figure out that thing, then we'll kind of go back to sort of the specific strategies around that. But yeah.
Interesting. And I also want to understand, kind of, we talk obviously about Google and Facebook and the walled gardens and these walled gardens that have always determinated data. And, you know, advertisers put their money into these platforms because they know what they're going to get. They can measure, they can target, they're getting everything they need. Is there call, obviously, you know, Condé Nast, you are big in and of yourself already, but is there call, like, we're starting to see it happen with different consortiums and different kind of ID solutions across different markets. Is there a call for publishers to start working more together and to pull their data together to then say, okay, to take on the likes of Google and Facebook and say, right, we can do this as a collective?
Yeah. I mean, nothing would warm my heart more. I think it's something the industry is sort of ripe with the dead bodies of publisher co-ops. And
there
I think
are so many. Yeah.
I mean, it's still frequent conversations we have of like, you know, you take folks that are in similar size and like, why don't we team up? It seems like it makes a bunch of sense on paper. I think where it gets a little bit complicated is on the sales side, right? And so how do you pacify one or two or three or four sales teams, and how do you attribute revenue to campaigns that were sold by this team that ran on that site? So I think we would, from a technology perspective, I think that's probably the easiest thing in our sort of what we've discovered. I think it's really the people perspective of how do you make that mechanics of that thing work.
Yeah. I mean, the dead bodies you speak of, generally, Pangea, they've crashed and burned. Yeah. Pangea is a great example.
Yeah, yeah.
Crashed and burned largely because of ego. You've got these big, big publishers, you know, big names, and they're going, I will work with you because I know I have to, but I'm better and bigger than you, so I'm going to control all of this. It's like, okay, you can't come into it as a marriage of equals if you're going to have that kind of attitude. And that's why a lot of them fall down. But then you've got, so in the UK, another example, like the Ozone Project, so they're trying to, there are examples in different markets, and you've got sort of like European Net ID Foundation. There's Very Me, which is a single sign on across different publishers in Germany, for example, where if they can actually have a separate entity that controls that, so you haven't got the egos coming together and trying to bash it out. There's actually somebody else that sits above it. That, to me, feels like it could be a better solution. But again, it ties back to, Nate, what you were saying earlier, like having sort of one person own this that is not related, it's not weaponized, it's not commercialized. Actually, that's where the solution could be. But are we trying to go against Google and Facebook? Some people say we are, others say, well, actually, no, let's just let them crack on with their own thing. How do we compete, or should we even be trying to compete? Joe, what do you think about that?
competing with Google and Facebook is tough. Primarily, I see them as publisher businesses in many regards, like Facebook in particular, Google less so, to be honest.
That is always the argument, though. Are they publishers or platforms? And,
yes.
They can sit in both buckets.
Yeah, definitely. So I think from a publisher's perspective, there is no way you're going to compete with Facebook in certain regards. There are certain things Facebook knows which you, a publisher, will never, ever get to know. The flip side is, like, you had Pete on from Business Insider. He spoke about Business Insider has real insight into whether you're looking for a mortgage right now. So I think publishers have this super valuable data, which allows them to compete for different dollars to what Facebook and Google are typically going after. So definitely, like, competition in some regards. But actually, I think the real competition for publishers is an ad tech industry which has commoditized their data and commoditized their inventory. And actually, it is that industry which has done publishers real damage, and in many ways is what publishers are competing with. We talk a lot about third-party data. It's a $19 billion industry in the US. It is, broadly speaking, built off the backs of publishers. Publishers are what feeds those models. There is a seed set, but then the models are trained off publisher data. Mm. So actually, publishers are supporting this enormous ad tech ecosystem. Actually, I feel like that is the competition publishers face, is regaining the control of their data, regaining the control of their ad inventory, and commanding the correct prices for it. And I think privacy is putting that control back in the hands of publishers.
And Nate and Jason, would you both agree with that, that actually this third-party ecosystem that we've all helped to create, we now have to try and bring it down in some way, but that actually then takes a lot of a lot of balls, basically, to be able to go and do that while knowing it will impact us commercially in some way. Jason, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I think it's hard. So as Conde, we use very, very little third-party data anymore.
Right.
And only if we are pressed to use it for, you know, a demo situation mainly. Mm-hmm. But as far as behavioral and things like that, we just don't rely on it anymore. And I think Joe's absolutely right. I think that data exists because of a small seed set sitting somewhere and it got modeled up. I do think there's a difference, though, between third-party providers that are collecting, like, the exhaust gas of other things, looking at bid streams or looking at things and creating a market where it didn't exist because they can just scrape data from some exhaust of something else, versus the third-party providers that maybe are directly collecting really valuable data.
Yes.
That if you go directly to them and create second-party relationships, like, you can still have a quality relationship, even though they might also be selling these segments in third-party marketplaces. So I think for us, it's trying to wade through also, like, who are the good providers of that? There's no real good benchmark of, like, this is a good player in the third-party ecosystem.
Chat to your mates again. Yeah. Ask your friends.
Yeah. So, like, call up people. Yeah. Like, do you trust these guys? Do you use them? What do you think? What's their, you know, background? But yeah, I think there's a place for those guys, maybe not in a third-party relationship, but maybe more in a second-party direct integrations.
Mm-hmm. Nate, what are your thoughts?
So the question, just to rephrase, it's like, you started the question with kind of like, if the Google, the Facebook.
I went around the houses a bit, yeah, right? I do admit that.
Whether or not they're a, you know, a competitor or not.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, I think that's a very different perspective from whether you look at the buy side.
Yeah.
Right? They're critical.
Sure.
Right? It's like, they have the audience, they have the quality audience, they have the quality inventory, you have to work with them. Right. Now, and then you have independent ad tech over here. Right. And so you have kind of going on, like, left to right for, you know, the, you know, people listening. Like, on the far left, you have independent ad tech. On the far right, you have television. Right. Which we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. which is, you know, kind of to say linear, which you don't really see, you know, any of the, you know, digital stuff.
Yeah.
In the middle, you have this stuff that, you know, the walled gardens are talking about now, which looks like clean rooms. Right. And so I think what we end up having is you end up having a normalization. Right. You have, you know, if the independent ad tech has always been talked about identity, about deterministic and about, you know, things like that, you know, kind of, and that's the far left. The far right has always talked about panel and modeling. Clean rooms are somewhere in the middle. I think they might actually offer an opportunity for us to redesign around that standard, which makes it a lot easier to do cross media. Right. So I think that, again, we have 3 to 5 years ahead of us. Right. And I think we're going to figure out how to handle those things. But I kind of look at, you know, what the walled gardens are doing with the clean room environments, and I'm looking at them and say, that's a good thing. It protects the users, you know, it protects the identity. You can get some information out. You can get enough information probably to create some level of probabilistic attribution modeling, right? And, you know, I think we end up with a kind of a media standard instead of digital versus linear television. And I think, you know, that's maybe something that we get a silver lining out of all
Interesting.
This.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go completely the other direction now. And I'm referring to Google. Obviously, Google have done studies recently. Of course they have. Looking at the importance of behavioral data and actually that it does, and that revenues for publishers do drop, that engagement for advertisers goes down massively as well. But then there are other schools of thought and there are other research reports out there that actually say, no, you don't need it. You actually, this behavioral targeting, this data is irrelevant. We don't need it at all. So are we trying to, first of all, do you believe that's true? Does that impact your yields? Does that impact kind of your engagement and actually kind of generating what you need from a performance perspective for your clients? But also, do we believe that we're trying to, in a really, really convoluted way, fix something that maybe doesn't even need to be fixed in the first place? Nate?
Yeah, sure. I think it's, you can look at there's the independent studies that you're talking about. I'm kind of somewhat familiar with some of them. Like there's there's the scenario where, 62%, of the eCPM drop, with removing behavioral advertising. That was the Google one.
That was the Google one.
Right. And then, I forget the other research, but there's been other research that there's no impact or no effect.
Yeah.
Right. It's, from a buy side, right, I think what you generally, the issue that you have with ID instability, kind of the things that we're talking, especially in the UUID space, is the reliance on attribution tracking that was on the UUID, right? And so, what we've seen so far, as we kind of like inspected, this issue, is that the conversion rates drop.
Yeah.
Right. The conversion rate with the release of ITP. I haven't inspected it since Mozilla, but they drop more dramatically on what you can call upper funnel, right? Things that have longer attribution windows than shorter attribution windows. And so as, the IDs have shorter, as the cookie IDs have shorter and shorter half-lives, right? That problem becomes, balloons higher, it balloons, right? But so far as an industry, we've been able to, we've been able to get around it. Like the entire campaign CPA and conversion rate have stayed the same, right? But because the model is basically optimizing to the new areas, right? It's just avoiding, Safari browsers. It's avoiding Mozilla browsers. Now, once that problem hits critical mass and you have to go to an advertiser and explain what you were used to of having a $15 CPA is now $35, but it's still actually things really haven't changed. It's just the tracking that's changed. When you have to have that hard conversation with your client, then I think we're all up for a rude awakening, right? But it's like so far, you haven't had to have those conversations because it's hidden.
Interesting. But you are gearing up for them. Have to.
Yeah.
Jason, publisher perspective.
Can you first question again? Sorry.
What was the question? I can't remember. So looking at, we talk about behavioral targeting and the need for this behavioral this behavioral data, but actually there are schools of thought out there that say, don't need it, doesn't matter. There's other ways we can go into contextual. Yeah. What's the point of it?
Yeah. I think for us, when we manufacture and make our sort of segment catalog available, it's contextual and behavioral. I think for the most part, the olden days, you could sell Vogue Runway for X CPM that was, exorbitant, and that's people just bought it because it was Vogue Runway. I think now it's still there. Contextual is still there, but I think it's more often behavioral, and it's more often behavioral that we are manufacturing ourselves and putting out into market as a first-party behavioral segment, whether that's our data, whether that's second-party data, whether that's data we got through acquisitions of other companies that kind of pull into our portfolio. But there is still a huge hunger for behavioral on our side. And I think effective CPMs, I think we talked a little about this earlier, like ours for Apple, it hasn't been super negatively impacted in the last 3 months to 6 months. Kind of just holding steady on that. Knock on wood. I think maybe different than some of the other folks experiencing with that.
Yeah.
And I think there is probably nuances when you dig into that around sort of optimizing away from those browsers and the backend side. There's more to it than that, but just looking at the straight numbers, it looks fairly flat.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Joe?
I think Google's research sets up a false dichotomy, which is effectively it's saying, hey, let's build an entire ecosystem. Everything this ecosystem will bid on will be the cookie. Let's build hundreds of companies and algorithms which rely on this. And then, when we remove it, it stops working. Obviously, like, it's a no-brainer. But actually, there are alternatives, right? Like Business Insider, for example, also to Jason's point on Conde, build a load of behavioral segments with first-party data. When they insert that into the programmatic ecosystem, their CPMs go up in those environments. So the loss of cookies is being equated with the loss of behavioral data. That's not true. The loss of cookies means certain type of behavioral data goes away, publishers have really valuable behavioral data, which is still available without cookies. So let's change the currency of ad tech away from the cookie, which is obviously going towards the behavioral data, which is available today, which is primarily publisher data.
Interesting. We're running out of time, and I did want to ask our lovely audience if they have any questions for any of our panelists, our guests. So I'm going to open up to the floor. Do we have any questions from anybody? Please raise your hand. Yes. Jason Keller, please speak. So for the benefit of our listeners, and we'll edit this out, obviously, so it sounds a bit more professional. Jason's asking, you know, we talk about deterministic data. What about declarative data and actually kind of putting up a paywall and trying to get data that way? Are publishers scared of going down that route? Jason?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think we've experimented with a bunch of different ways. Like, what is the right value proposition to reward a consumer, right? Is just having them give information, you know, is that worth enough to give access to an X period amount of time? I think those are all great questions. I think they require a lot of investment on our side to figure out and test those and A/B test those ideas. But it's certainly something that we do consider. Also, it is interesting. Like, we do surveys on Condé, especially around in the Vogue and Vanity Fair world, where people, it is amazing with those brands, what people will give to you for really nothing in return. Like fashion preferences, brand alignment, fashion houses, like things that are just sort of lifestyle things that because they're Vogue and Vanity Fair, and you get like these, they give you the information for really just nothing. So we have this really interesting sort of panel data that is just declared by the user just because they love the brands. And I think that's sort of a unique thing that you can't really buy. We try to figure out ways to kind of reward that behavior, but it's a fascinating world.
But it also, that could be, I mean, by being able to tap into that kind of data, that again is another great source of targeting that you can 100%. Offer your advertisers, right? So actually that would potentially kind of raise ECPMs even higher if you're able to go, turns out this person loves fashion, hates dogs.
Yeah, and there's absolutely do end up...
I don't know who would hate dogs, but you know.
That's monsters hate
absolutely
dogs.
Monsters.
No, you're right. So that data does end up getting rescored into propensity models and scored across the ecosystem and our world and leveraged.
I think what we should be preparing for is that we are going to lose the ID, right? The ID is not going to be there. But it's probably going to be replaced by something that supports nano segmentation. Right. And the nano segmentation is like, instead of having, 1.6 billion US device IDs, maybe you end up with, 1.6 million nano segments. Right. And so, it's still an order of magnitude that is more than we can handle in our brains. Right. That's the point of saying kind of like 1.6 million. And so when you start flagging things for like these declarative data assets, right. And when you start thinking of in that world, it's like you're just labeling. The ID with a whole bunch of meta characteristics. And what you might end up finding, the model is going to discover that a micro cluster exists of people that like heavy metal and wear sweater vests. Right. That's going to just have a number and it's going to have a vector and the model can consume that. Right. As opposed to someone can buy it or someone can sell it.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Got you. And so, the idea of collecting the declarative data assets, I think sets the stage for like a micro nano segmentation world, that it's not, I think it's, put it this way, it's a good idea to start doing it now.
Interesting. Joe, what's your thoughts on this?
I couldn't agree more with what was just said. I think broadly speaking, the publishers who will win over the next few years are the ones who realize that they're data businesses. And actually, Facebook realized this a long, long time ago. A lot of publishers are slowly coming to that realization now, is that, hey, we are data businesses. And I think there are new models for them to sell and transact on that data, which are coming into play. And some have already hit, and some will continue to hit over the coming years. But I don't think there's much more I can add than that.
Fair enough. That was a great question. Thank you. Any more questions from the audience? No, then we shall leave it there. I want to say thank you very much to my wonderful guests, Joe, Nate, and Jason. Thank you to our wonderful audience as well for engaging and sticking with us. I didn't introduce myself earlier. My name is Lindsay Rowntree. I'm head of content at ExchangeWire. And that is the end of this episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you.